2 hours, it's nothing but NBA conversation from the local front to around the association. Now let's get things rolling with Salt City Hoops on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700.
All right, welcome everybody into the Salt City Hoops show on ESPN 700. I'm your host, Andy Larson, managing editor of Salt City Hoops, the ESPN True Hoop affiliate for the Utah Jazz. Angie Treasure joining me in place of Zach Harper, our usual co-host, because he is currently in Las Vegas covering the NBA Summer League. We will have him on later on in the program in the 8 o'clock hour talking about the extra couple days of Summer League that he is seeing and I am missing because I am up here doing the show. So instead, we've got Angie Treasure, audience development manager at KSL.com, recap writer for Salt City Hoops, overall jazz expert, extraordinaire, etc. As always, this is a social show, so if you guys want to chime in with anything we're saying, please tweet us at Andy B. Larson, is mine, or at snark underscore tank. You can call us 877-353-0700. We haven't had a show in a couple of weeks, so we're going to be talking about all the Jazz's offseason moves so far. Big trades, two big trades, one big free agent signing we want to definitely get to, kind of look at where the roster stands now. We're going to preview, I guess, just straight up do a new segment called In or Out.
I'm really excited about that.
Basically inspired by our conversations at Summer League with all the other blog writers and people out there, which are basically like, are you in on X person or are you out on them? Or are you in on vegetables or are you out on them, Angie?
In on vegetables.
I'm out on vegetables.
Anything green you're not down with?
I mean, lime Skittles are delicious.
Okay. Not a lot of nutritional value, Andrew.
Not a lot. Tim Duncan retired. We'll talk briefly about that. Like I said, we'll bring Zach Harper on. By soon enough, the Jazz of Summer League game will be over. Right now, they are, let's see, what's the score of that game? Nuggets are leading 52-41 over the Utah Jazz. Trey Lyles not playing in tonight's game, so limited takeaways what we can look at for the Jazz's actual roster. Then, of course, we'll go around the NBA, do a little bit LOL Lakers like usual, and call it a show.
Yeah.
Sound good?
I'm stoked on this.
Okay, but let's talk about the Jazz offseason so far, because like, there's been a lot of hype about all the Jazz's moves.
Yeah.
We've got the trade for Joe, or let's start with the trade of George Hill, which happened before the draft.
It's crazy that there hasn't been a show since then.
Well, we did have a trade. We did have a show since then. We had a show right before free agency. I haven't had a show with you since then, though, so I want to hear your opinions on the move.
It's brilliant. I mean, if you had to pick one player to be kind of that stopgap starting point guard in a year where Dante Exum's returning from injury, someone who's long and can defend, someone who can spot up sufficiently from three and is on a friendly contract, like, I don't know who else in the league you would get that from.
Right.
Like, George Hill was it. It narrowed down the field in that. And then George Hill with his bleach blonde hair, it's gone. But his Cisco hair was spectacular.
He said he's thinking about dyeing his hair either green or blue in his press conference.
That read as a joke to me.
It may have been, but
I took that as a straight up joke.
I don't know. He may just do it.
If we're going to go reading people, let's go with Angie's ability and not Andy's.
I'm out on Angie's ability to read people.
It would be good, though. It would be very Rodman-esque. No one's done that for a while.
I don't see why Green... I don't care if it was a joke. I mean, I couldn't decide if he was joking or not.
Yeah, I'm like 90% sure that was a joke.
Okay.
But yeah, George Hill, I think the other person who would fit that is Jrue Holiday, and he's been so injury-plagued that this is better. George Hill is a superior candidate to fit that role. Some guy who's got playoff experience. He seems excited about the opportunity to be a mentor to Dante. He's also an indie guy along with Trey Lyles and Gordon Hayward. Although he and Trey have that, like, we came from IPS, Indianapolis Public Schools. So they're a little more closely aligned than Gordon.
Yeah. Meanwhile, G Time's a private school kid, which is pretty clear.
Right.
Shelvin Mack, you'll remember, also went to Butler. So there's the Indianapolis tie there. Yeah, that's kind of exciting. I think that's ultimately the move that will make the biggest difference to the Jazz next season.
1,000%.
You know, because he's likely to be the starter. He's got a younger Dante Exum as a competitor compared to, like, Joe Johnson, who has Gordon Hayward, and Boris Diaw, who has Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert to compete with
right.
for minutes.
And if you're thinking about, like, where the play is being elevated from, like, the Jazz's point guard play the last three seasons has been awful.
Right.
So you're elevating it to, I think you can at least say that he's, you know, an average starting point guard. Above average. Like, it's hard. There's only 30. But.
I mean, it kind of depends who you ask, right? Like, if you ask Zach Lowe, he may honestly say that he's like a 10 through 15th in the league in point guards.
Yeah. That's such a big upgrade from Howell Neto, bless his heart, and
right.
Trey Burke.
Who's probably, you know, second or third worst starting point guard in the league.
Oh, easily. And then Dante Exum.
Norris Cole started a lot of games for the Pelicans.
It's not great. That Pelly's, some of those Pelly's lineups.
It's a bummer.
Like, it was a bummer, but it was so spectacular when the lineups would come out before the games, because you were like, is this real life? Are these basketball players? Where am I?
Let's talk about, since we have had a show on that move, though, let's talk about and move on to Joe Johnson.
Okay.
That was a surprising thing, and we have now had the press conference with him since he, you know, officially signed the deal. And I thought his rationale was really interesting, that, like, he wanted to be a leader again, kind of in off the court in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
And was happy to do it even in a small town like Utah, which is probably not what most people expected for him. Said he was from a small town in Arkansas, kind of used to that feel.
Right.
And ultimately, it sounds like the front office of the Utah Jazz told him a convincing enough story that he wanted to sign here. Even when I'm not sure that he could have gotten more money elsewhere, but you look around the league at the other players who got a ton of money, and I think 2 years, $22 million for Joe Johnson is a pretty good deal.
Really good deal. I have a hard time believing that contract becomes, you know, it's certainly not going to be an albatross or immovable if something goes south. But the interesting thing about the Joe Johnson thing is, I think there's this myth that when a move doesn't happen either at the deadline or at the in the off season, it's because management's just sitting on their hands. And while I think that's true sometimes, you know, the Jazz management has really done their due diligence, and that's kind of where the Joe Johnson thing allegedly stemmed from. According to David Locke, they were just making phone calls and kind of said, hey, would Joe be interested in this kind of role? And his agent said that Joe was actually really intrigued by the Jazz, and it was kind of on his short list, and he was really liked Quinn and liked the team, and it really is a good fit. I mean, he's certainly older. I mean, this is not the Joe Johnson of, this is not quite ISO Joe of years past, but again, you get another playoff experience guy, you get somebody who's comfortable with the ball late game situations, and it doesn't seem like he's going to be a diva or worry about starting or not, but you could move him into that starting position if it becomes necessary.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I specifically asked him if it would be, if he cared whether or not he started or came off the bench, and he said, no, you know, whatever helps the team win.
Yeah.
And I think,
which is a pretty standard line.
Right.
And he spoke in sports cliches quite a bit.
Right. Like, this is his, what, 16th NBA, 15th NBA season?
Right.
So, yeah.
Being candid is
before.
Not high on his priority list, probably.
But if starting really was important to him, he wouldn't have signed with the Utah Jazz, right?
Absolutely. He had options. I mean, just by virtue of it being a 30-team league.
Yeah, I think his actions speak louder than words.
Agreed.
Here.
Yeah.
I think he's a really interesting fit, kind of culturally, first of all, with he's another kind of one of the Southern gentlemen that have, like,
yeah,
the Derek Favors is the Rodney Hood.
Rodney Hood forever, guys. That's all I'm going to say.
Why?
I don't know.
Why do you say that?
Every time he talks, he's similar to Derek. I think he more fills the like Al Jefferson shaped hole in my heart.
Okay.
Just because he's just the sweetest.
Yeah, no, Rodney is the best.
Seems genuine and is so good to the media and just seems like such a good dude. And he's got a little baby and everything's just coming up Rodney for me.
You're in on Rodney
Hood. I'm in on Rodney Hood for a lot of reasons.
I think he's such, like, he's so beyond his years in so many different ways. Maybe more on the court. than even off the court. Like,
agreed,
off the court in all the ways that you just said. But, like, on the court, Rodney Hood is crazy
mature,
and like he's got this old player pick and roll game that is ridiculous.
Love
I don't
it.
Know. It's
he was 95th percentile in scoring in isolation.
Was really
David Locke's recent?
That's
stat.
Crazy.
That's crazy. But it feels like a lot of second year players. I mean, we saw it with Trey Burke get the ball with less than 10 seconds left, and you're like, all right, they're gonna panic. And throw up something awful. And
right.
Rodney really keeps his cool and makes a lot of correct decisions. I mean, we saw that at the end of that Houston game where Derek Favors got the dunk for the win.
Yeah.
And he just seemed to repeatedly make those kinds of very calm decisions.
Yeah, it very rarely turns it over for a pick-and-roll player, which is pretty important.
Yeah.
Less so than Gordon Hayward, for example.
Sure. Although I think some of the Gordon stuff, to defend G, I think a lot of that's confirmation bias. People are already have the narrative that he turns the ball over a lot.
Okay, but yeah. But
like, he does turn the ball over.
Statistically, this is also true, right? Like,
yeah, but it's not like more... I don't know what the exact number is.
No, I don't think Gordon's like a turnover, like...
It's not, yeah.
He's not passing the ball to the other team on purpose. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not that big of a
problem.
But
when you handle the ball at the end of the game, right, and they had as many close games as they did.
Yeah, I'm not trying to say Gordon Hayward's a bad turnover player.
No, but you're I get your point. But I'm just, that was just my side soapbox to say I don't think he's that turnover prone.
Okay.
But. Tangent.
Yeah, Big Ten. That was like a tertiary tangent because we started out talking about Joe Johnson.
Southern gentlemanhood.
Yeah.
Was where that tree branch
And Rodney
started.
Hood is like... Joe Johnson was the first player he ever met,
yeah,
and he's talked about that multiple times about how like that moment kind of made it possible in his mind that he would kind of chase the NBA dream.
Same with Dante and Joe. So there's this whole like mentorship thing happening on the Jazz now, and I just love it.
And a little bit now with Rudy Gobert and Boris Diaw.
Yes.
I don't know like how much Rudy Gobert looked up to Boris Diaw. I haven't had a chance to ask him about it yet.
Yeah.
Obviously. They know each other from the French national team. Rudy really likes Boris from his time there. I don't know like that Rudy looked up to Boris. I will ask him.
It would make sense just with the timeline, though.
Right.
Like
10 years younger.
Yeah.
And Boris has been in the NBA for a long time. So he's obviously been one of the leaders of the French national team.
He called him Bobo in a video. So there's that.
Yeah. Called him Fat Man.
Called him Fat Man and Bobo. So we're going to have to ask Rudy if those nicknames will both stick.
We've got a question from Riley O'Brien at Riley O'Jazz. What's left on the Jazz to-do list this offseason, and which move has been your favorite thus far? I'll start with the last question first, which move has been my favorite. I think it's definitely the George Hill move.
Yeah.
Joe Johnson is 35 years old and was just waived by Brooklyn last year.
Right.
And Joe Johnson's a better than replacement level player, even now. But Brooklyn felt that they were better off rebuilding without him. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And I do worry that, we're going to see a 35 and 36-year-old Joe Johnson not be able to do some things, right? Like,
sure,
that's just how aging works. I remember Jazz fans back in the day were very excited about Rajah Bell signing, and he was a catastrophe, quite honestly.
Yeah, but he clotheslined Kobe that one time.
That's true, but... was still a catastrophe
and
got way too many minutes and then complained about getting way too many minutes. And it was just...
It was a mess.
It was the worst.
Yeah.
I don't think Joe Johnson will be that. And I think so long as, you have those sort of expectations and realize, he's probably not a starter, those
right.
sort of things, it's all good.
Boris
but he's
going
to frustrate Jazz fans at times with... he may hold on to the ball a little bit too long. Dennis Lindsay, by the way, talked about that and said in his time in Miami... they were really impressed with how little he held onto the ball and how much of a player in the team concept he was. I wonder if he can keep that up for a whole 82 games a season.
Sure.
And then the defense is good against slower players, but not against quicker players, which is,
right.
again, what you would expect for a 35 to 36-year-old.
Right. You'd hope he's matched up against guys on the bench that it's favorable for him,
right.
with that experience.
And George Hill is just, younger and a better player, quite frankly.
Right. I mean, if you're talking about the range of upgrade or, like, the discrepancy between what they're replacing, George Hill is 1,000%
right.
the biggest steal.
I will say this. All three players are really, really good in plus-minus.
That's good.
even if you just look at the single year data, mm-hmm. so like ESPN's Real Plus Minus takes into account both prior years and kind of a statistical prior, mm-hmm. which is basically uses their box score stats to start the RAPM measurement and then goes either side based on how well that team does while that player is on the floor.
We need the drop of Andy saying, I'm about to be a nerd.
I'm about to be a nerd, sorry.
So, I'm just kidding.
What's interesting is that all three of those players are, even if you just look at how their teams did without any of that other stuff that ESPN adds in, which yeah. I like and helps the data out, these are still three very good players who help their teams win. I think that's why the Jazz identified them and were able to actually acquire them this offseason.
I agree. And I think Boris Diaw kind of has the potential to be a pendulum swing player. I mean, he's had past seasons where he hasn't cared, and that's been bad, Boris.
Right. That's the thing, is like, if he cares, I think it'll be a decent fit.
Yeah, and I believe that there are enough reasons for him to care here. I think the fact that it's a little Spursian at the Jazz, I think the fact that he's got a teammate who's also a countryman that they seem to have a decent rapport, I also feel like... he's got enough reasons, and the Jazz are bound to be competitive. You know, he checked out at Bobcats because they were terrible.
The Jazz will hopefully not be terrible.
Hopefully, you know, knock on all of the wooden things in the room.
Right.
But
we've got a caller.
That's exciting.
We've got a caller. His name is Sam. Sam, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. Welcome into the show. What do you have for us?
Thanks. I just want to say I love the show and I love the website.
Oh, well, but thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the free agent signings. I turned it down, but I heard you guys talking about Joe Johnson and George Hill, and I didn't hear you get to Boris Diaw, but I heard you talking about Rajah Bell, too. And I remember these last signings, like Rajah Bell, and then there was Randy Foy, and they always had their, like, cliche interviews and stuff, but hearing from all these guys now, and I haven't heard much from Boris Diaw yet, probably just because he's playing over in the French qualifying game and stuff, and he's busy right now, but I don't know if it means anything. He seemed kind of sincere on Twitter. I don't know if that means anything, but George Hill and Joe Johnson seem like they're pretty stoked to be in Salt Lake, which makes it really fun to be a fan right now.
Yeah, I thought a few things were interesting. One, as you pointed out, Boris Diaw wasn't able to come to the press conference with the other two players because, well, he's still in France, so he can't be interviewed by us yet until France, is basically out of the Olympics, so we still probably have another month. George Hill talked about how, you know, he's an Indianapolis guy, and so playing for the Pacers, he thought he would finish out his career there. But then he talked about how he was excited to be in a place that he was wanted. And, you know, the Jazz clearly had targeted him for a while, and they wanted to acquire him and spent, you know, a pretty good resource, a first-round draft pick, on actually acquiring him and how much that meant to him. And like you pointed out, same thing with Joe Johnson, a team where he has a clear role, and the Jazz made the case at how he could fill that and make the team better right away. I thought that was really kind of mature professionalism rather than, say, Rajah Bell, you'll remember... was talking with Kobe Bryant, who flew him in on a helicopter and then in the end chose the Jazz for money reasons. That's not what either of these guys or any three of these guys had in mind when they ended up in a Jazz uniform.
Yeah, and I think, two of the guys actually were traded, so they didn't really have a say whether they ended up in Salt Lake.
Right.
But
I think Sam raised a good point. Like, Boris, as soon as the trade was, even it was basically reported by Woj, he said, I'm excited to be in the Jazz uniform next season. We've seen guys go the other way and be like, oh, I can't believe this. I can't believe I found out this way, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
That's not what happened with Boris.
No. I agree. I think there's some sincerity there. I had a harder time telling on the Joe Johnson thing, but like you said, I think with him specifically, actions speak louder than words.
Right.
And he did decide to sign with the Jazz. So I think it's safe to say... at least 66% of the team or the new signings are stoked to be on this roster, which has a lot of buzz going on about it right now.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Are you comfortable with that? Like, you know, Zach Lowe is talking about the Jazz. I had so many people tell me, I went down to Vegas this weekend to watch Summer League. I had so many people just come up to me and say, Andy, I'm so excited about the Jazz next season. I think they're going to be a 55-win team. I think they're going to be home court in the West.
I had someone
from the Sixers tell me that they thought not only would the Jazz be a better team than the Oklahoma City Thunder next season without Kevin Durant, that sort of makes sense. They think that the Jazz will be a better team than the San Antonio Spurs, which, by the way, won 67 games last season.
A franchise high.
Yeah, and...
That's too much.
You're not willing to go there.
I don't know if... I recently had a birthday, and I think I'm slowly turning into a more and more realistic person. Considering all terrible options. And there's a timeline where this is not true.
Yeah,
I think the buzz is really fun. I think it's fun for the team to be talked about this way. I think it's nice to see the validation kind of from great basketball minds around. But simultaneously, they didn't even make the playoffs last year.
I can already hear Quinn Snyder's press conference on media day one being like, we haven't accomplished anything.
Yeah, that's what he said last year.
We haven't made the playoffs.
Because there was...
We still need to work. We still got so much left to do, blah, blah, blah.
There wasn't this buzz about the team last offseason, but they were kind of a dark horse team. This is more like, oh, they're for sure going to be contending for a top four spot. Last season was like, oh, yeah, they're a playoff team.
They'll fight for an eight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's always the caveat of injuries, blah, blah, blah. But, like, I am in on this team definitely being a playoff team. If they, you know, that should happen easily. But people talking about, top three seed, that's madness.
It's
a really well-constructed team. This is and it's going to be really well-coached. And if Quinn and Dennis can get everyone to buy in... And everyone stays healthy and everyone's knees are bubble wrapped at all times.
Let's be fatalistic for a second. Like, what's the worst thing that could happen? It's probably
Gordon
the
Hayward.
Most important injury is, in my mind, actually Rudy Gobert.
I think with the signings this offseason, I think the Jazz could stay afloat if Gordon went down for a while.
Right, because then you've got Roddy and Joe Johnson and you still have your bigs and you're still a good defensive team.
There's really no backup five.
If you have Alec Burks as your third guard, you're probably okay.
Right, the backup five true center is Jeff Withey, which I think he could survive in short stretches. I think the team more likely would shove Derek to the five and then have a Trey Lyles start at the
or
four.
Boris and then still or have Boris. Trey as your scoring guy off the bench. I think I'd rather do that, by the way.
But Derek has just not been proven to be an above average center.
Right.
He's an above average power forward. He's kind of an average center.
Yeah.
And Rudy just changes. Rudy kind of is the heart of the identity of the team.
Right.
And I'm with you. I still feel like Gordon Hayward's the most talented player on the team. But identity wise, Rudy being injured, All the praying to all the deities that he is okay in Rio.
I mean, quite frankly, the wing depth for the Jazz is better than the big depth, even after Trey Lyles' emergence and Boris Diaw. Alec Burks is your fourth wing is a pretty good setup.
Yeah.
And that's what the Jazz have right now. We've got a question from Giorgio Spanias. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but if I'm
not, how you said it.
I like it too. Thank you. is Shelvin Mack our backup point guard or is Dante? And are we going to move Howell Neto high from Greece?
Oh, cool.
Thanks for listening from Greece, by the way, Giorgios. So I think Dante is a backup point guard.
Yeah. They still want to get him significant minutes.
So, yeah, there's that. There's worrying about Dante's development long term. And then, quite frankly, there's that Dante, if you just look at how impactful he was on the defensive end, I think you can make a case that Dante Exum's rookie year was better than Shelvin Mack.
Sure.
Even though Shelvin Mack did a whole lot more offensively than Dante, who is one of the worst offensive rookies ever.
Right.
Dante's defense made him a above replacement level player.
Right.
And
because he was so good on that end.
Shelvin Mack is, slightly above replacement, but still pretty much there.
Sure.
I mean,
I think if you're in a circumstance where you have to have Shelvin Mack as your backup point guard, that's not
terrible.
Right,
it's not the worst thing in the world.
No.
It's better than Shelvin Mack as a starter.
Right, while making a playoff push, for crying out loud.
Right.
which was what you had to do. But
I do also think the team, to answer your other question, I do think they keep Howell Neto, waive Chris Johnson, and then you get to 15 that way. You can keep one of Joel Bolomboy or Tibor Pleiss.
It becomes interesting.
Yeah.
I think they keep Neto. I think he probably hangs out with the SLC Stars quite a bit and sells a lot of tickets with girls wanting to whistle at him. He got a haircut, according to Snapchat, and also it's a good haircut.
It's a good haircut?
Yeah, it's a good haircut.
Go look that up on Snapchat. Is it anywhere else?
I don't think it's up today.
Just all follow
Instagram,
Howell,
I think.
Okay.
I think it's on his Instagram page.
All right. We got to take a break. On the other side, we're doing the in or out segment, talking about the summer league performances of various Jazz and other rookies, and answering a couple more questions from you guys on Twitter as well. That's next on the Salt City Hoop Show on ESPN 700.
You're listening to Salt City Hoops on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700.
All right, welcome back into the Salt City Hoop Show, ESPN 700. Andy Larson, Angie Treasure joining you. A couple more questions for you guys on Twitter before we get to the in or out segment. Is there any chance that they can make Shane Foster's song the official song of Summer League? I think they should, quite frankly. John, cue up the Shane Foster song for us to play at some point during the show. Because we've got it now.
It's happening.
Have you ever heard this song? I'm sure I've made you listen to it.
I don't know if I have.
This is
former... Has it played on this show before?
Yes.
Then probably.
This is former Dallas Mavericks second-round pick singing...
I like how this story is starting.
Shane Foster, played at Vanderbilt, singing I Can't Wait to Play in the NBA right after he was drafted.
Great.
Bad news. It's never played in the NBA.
Aww.
It's heartbreaking and the worst. Aww. And also... the truth for the vast majority of summer league players.
That breaks my little heart.
Yeah, no, it is absolutely the saddest thing that's I've ever seen. The saddest YouTube video, anyway.
Oh, it's a video?
Yeah, of him just singing the song. Oh. He's playing he plays the piano on this, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is getting worse.
I know.
I don't know how I'm coming back from this. Yeah, I think it's a good summer league anthem, though.
Yeah.
Speaking of sad things.
Anyway, if you want to know more about Shane Foster, really just Google him, his name and my name together, and I've written like two articles on him.
You have?
Yeah.
You've also written something about ponytails, but we can't find that on the internet.
No, that's not on the internet. I don't know where it is.
Yeah, it's out in the ether.
Cam Sahaley, I presume that's how you say it. Have you guys seen or heard much of how Exum is looking since he's been fully cleared? No, quite frankly, because he's not in Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
And didn't go to Vegas. So he's one of the only, I think there are only three guys on the Jazz's roster who I haven't seen.
Which is pretty good.
Or at least don't know where, like Dante Exum and Joe Ingles, Jeff Withey.
Because movie ticket incident.
Right. Jeff Withey is dealing with some personal problems
now. Don't keep the movie stub. That's all that you need to know.
Here's the thing. If Jeff Withey's on TV, like at, say, a summer league game, then his girlfriend should know about where he is and should be okay with it, right?
I don't think she's his girlfriend anymore.
Oh, okay.
I don't think.
That's a problem. I mean, that it ended that way?
Yeah. I have a theory about de-escalating or escalating bad things, and she like took it to the 10th level.
It was bad news bears for Jeff Withey.
It was like, what was the most dramatic possible way I can deal with this? Instagram post, which is pretty great, but awful.
At JPY Blue asks, which NBA arena will host the most sought after Pokemon Go gym? There is one right in the middle of Vivint Arena, by the way.
There is at the banners.
Yeah, the banners
There's
are
a Pokemon, Pokestop.
It's a Pokestop. I guess it's not a gym, though. The gym is on
the
corner.
Oh, that's not a gym. No.
By the track station. Right?
I thought the gym was
That's not a gym.
At LDS Business College.
You're right. So I think
we're revealing
one of the statues?
A lot. I don't know.
Okay, we're going to investigate and find out. Or if any of you all know, tweet us.
We also didn't really answer the Exum question.
Right.
Dennis Lindsay did say that there's been no setbacks. He didn't want to get too specific about timeline or progress, but he said everything's going well and there's been no setbacks.
Yeah. Basically, the answer is, Cam, no, we haven't heard much beyond what you've seen other than, like, he's doing good. He hasn't been bad.
He turned 21 yesterday.
He did turn 21.
Yesterday.
So, sharing a birthday with you.
With me. And his sister, who he shared a womb with. I was not in the womb. I've been on Earth for 6 years.
That's good.
Yeah.
Which NBA arena will host the most sought-after Pokemon Go gym? I mean, I...
The Garden?
Maybe. It's not... I feel like it's a Portland thing, right?
Yeah. Utah is the number two, like, most into Pokemon Go at all the states.
Really? Yeah. What's number one?
I don't know.
Oh, no.
I just saw a headline. I didn't click on it.
Okay, that's...
Saved you a click. Should have helped me out. But Utah is number two, which makes sense.
Yeah.
Like...
So maybe, I mean, depending on what number one is, number it really could be Vivint Arena.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's either Portland or it's a big city like New York.
Okay, let's get to Jazz Talk.
Fine.
And In-N-Out. In or out. Sorry. In or
out
is the name of the segment, not using that other contraction, conjunction, sorry.
Because it's a burger place.
Right.
That's the only reason.
So we wanted to look at players making a showing at this week's Summer League. And I also asked Zach about a couple of these when he comes on the show later on. Let's start with Tibor Pleiss.
Okay.
Tibor Pleiss played 22 minutes a game in the Summer League. It's averaged 9 points, 4 rebounds, and 1 assist per game. Are you in or out on Tibor Pleiss?
I'm out.
Yeah, I think I'm out on Tibor Pleiss, too.
It's tough, because he's great. He's as
super
a human
nice.
Being.
Like, we dabbed the other day, you know, like...
Oh, yeah?
He pulled me in.
Not dab. Yeah.
Not...
Daps?
Dapped, yeah, that, with the P. I'm pretty
you
white.
You didn't... You didn't dab.
Yeah, not that. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Don't. There's a microphone in front of my face.
I think
it's
I went blind
fault.
Watching Andy dab.
There's a microphone in front of my face. Anyway, he's just a very tall and nice
yeah.
human, is my point. He's frustrating Jazz coaches and executives because he's not in the right place and
yeah.
is not running the plays well and is not really defending well. And
doesn't seem to deter guys at the rim at all.
No, which is disappointing
which
for a 7'3 guy. He's picking up a ton of fouls. The rebounding is maybe the biggest issue. He only has 4 a game.
He can't seem to pull rebounds down in traffic.
Right.
I don't know if it's strength issue. I don't know if it's body positioning. But he's neither in the correct place nor is he able to secure rebounds well, even in summer league play. So.
Right.
You know, doesn't bode well for your second or third string center.
He is hitting a good number of shots from outside.
Yeah, and that's fun.
That's fun and good. And ultimately, if the Jazz do decide to go with Ball and Boy over Pleiss, which I think would make sense given that Ball and Boy is 22 and it's maybe shown a little bit. I can't say that.
Yeah.
Ball and Boy has probably shown less than Pleiss during the summer league, but has more potential, would be cheaper. I think maybe you can explore a Tibor Pleiss trade to kind of get that $3 million in salary off the cap, or if you could maybe buy him out, but
mm-hmm.
still he gets an NBA minimum contract, you can save like, you know, $1 million, let's say, from the cap that way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not great for Tibor staying in a Jazz uniform.
It's interesting. Did you watch that mic'd up segment that the Jazz Twitter tweeted out? It was a behind the scenes of Johnny Bryant type thing. Him coaching Summer League. And if you pay attention, like a lot of it is what Johnny's saying. But if you're paying attention in the background, some of the assistant coaches are just yelling at Tibor to do stuff.
Right.
Like he doesn't know where to be at any given moment.
Which is weird because like he's, you know, been with the Idaho Stampede
yeah.
and the Jazz for a while now. And,
right.
and the other players have been with the Jazz for about a week.
Sure. So you shouldn't have to yell at that guy more than the other people.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
All right, next one. Thon Maker.
I'm in.
Yeah?
If he's 19, I'm in.
Okay.
That sounded bad. Don't take that out of context.
Yeah, no. I think I'm out.
Interesting.
Because I'm pretty confident he's actually 19 or somewhere in there that it's if he's 20, 21, fine. And he's a super again a good interview. I think he wants to work hard, and I think those are good things. I don't think that he's improved enough over the last 2 years of his high school career that you can say that good attitude in media interviews and with executives translates to on-the-court improvement.
Sure.
I do think he's a hustle player.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a very misguided hustle player at times, as we saw with the 10 fouls.
Sure. That's a lot. He's kind of a double-double machine in Summer League, which is great, but you also don't want one of those double-doubles to
right,
be
the 10 fouls is a bummer. They don't let you keep doing that during
I'm
the regular
season.
I'm in on
10 fouls in the regular season.
Are you?
No. But that sounded like a fun thing to say.
That's, yeah, I'm out. I mean, I like it during Summer League because, like...
I'm in on getting an additional foul in overtime.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Because I think it'd be fun, like, guys foul out in getting another chance.
If a guy has fouled out in regulation, do you let him play that overtime?
Okay, so this is what I would do. No, if you foul out, you're out. But guys who are left on the floor get an additional foul. So okay. If you have a guy like Derek
with
Favors
five
with five, then and you have to play more, then you get another. Adam Silver, hit me up.
I like it. Chris Dunn has been very good in a Minnesota Timberwolves uniform so far.
In.
I'm super in.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what they do with Ricky Rubio at this point.
I want to ask Zach that. Jimmer Fredette, why not? Let's talk about him. He's averaging 16 points a game, 2 rebounds, 3.7 assists per game as well.
Out.
I've actually been, I'm out on him too, but I've been pretty impressed with his passing so far in this tournament.
Yeah.
He is shooting 3 for 11 against Jazz tonight, 0 for 4 from 3. That part's not great.
He's really good at bad basketball, that Jimmer Fredette.
That's kind of the problem.
He's so specific as who he is as a player. He's not versatile at all.
No.
He needs the ball in his hands, but he's also not a point guard because he's not a great distributor. And off the ball, he's too small. Like, as a 2, you just can't have him out there. And he's a poor defender. It's just been proven that he can't stick in the NBA and should probably head to Europe. Go hang out over there with your cute cheerleader wife.
That's fine with me. He's not that good. I don't know. That's really what it comes down to.
It's so interesting, though, these really almost transcendent college players who can't figure it out in the league.
Right.
I mean, it just doesn't necessarily translate. Which
I think so much of it has to do with size.
Yeah. Size matters, people.
Buddy Hield, 18-6-3, but he's only shooting 33% from the field.
Out.
Out on, I'm out on him permanently. Like,
I'm so wary of these basketball, like, players of the year. These college players of the year.
Which is weird, because it's, like, good players, right? Like,
yeah,
these are the very best players in college.
Like,
and,
Trey Burke? No.
Yeah.
Jimmer Fredette? No. Bad. Like, I think it's possible to put up good numbers and be on terrible teams and not actually be a great basketball player.
Right. I think Buddy Hield was very good at the college level last year.
Sure.
I think he will be able to spot up and shoot, and because he's taller and longer than Jimmer is, and I think he gives more of an effort than Jimmer does.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think the Pelicans will need him to do more.
That's the problem, and he's kind of struggling in this shot creation sort of role, even in summer league. I don't think he has a good rookie season.
Yeah.
He may be able to be like what Eric Gordon was for them light last season. I don't know. Like,
super
right?
light.
You make threes, and he can't
Eric
defend
Gordon
either.
Eric Gordon was a good three-point, really
right.
good three-point shooter.
I think Buddy Hield can be a good three-point shooter.
Okay. Yeah, I'm out on...
I'm out on Eric Gordon, too, just to be clear, but...
Like, as a Friday Night Lights fan, I'm out on anyone named Buddy.
Okay.
So.
Fair enough. Jazz just lost, by the way, 80-60. That's a convenient score. so that means that they are not going to be this year's Summer League champions and will play the loser of the Cavs-Lakers game later on tonight. We're going to go ahead and take a break. On the other side, promise we've got more time to answer your questions, and want to talk briefly about Tim Duncan's retirement this week and what he meant to the league and actually in his matchups against the Utah Jazz as well. That's next on the Salt City Hoop Show on ESPN 700.
You're listening to Salt City Hoops on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700.
We're using this as an intro in a non-Nick Young segment?
In or out on Iggy Azalea?
I'm out. I had to think about it.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's kind of fun.
Right.
And I don't mind, like...
I think it's pretty harmless.
Yeah, but... I don't mind, like, a harmless... Like, I'm in on Kesha, for example.
Interesting.
But I'm out on Iggy Azalea.
Interesting.
I just like the beat.
That's fair. This is a decent song.
Yeah.
I just think
I have no problem dancing along. I have a problem just from like a coordination standpoint,
right.
But not like an ethical problem dancing to Iggy.
It's not Fancy's song or Fancy's fault.
No, it's not Fancy's fault.
We have a question from Pete Busha.
Pete.
Who do you see getting the 15th roster spot?
It's an interesting question. Go for it.
I'll go. I think it's Ballin Boy.
That's what I was going to say.
which is and or see what happens in training camp. Because you don't have to make a decision until, you know, October 27th or whatever it is.
Sure.
But if you bring in Ballenboy, Plyce, and let's say Marcus Page and Deontay Christmas and, you know, I don't know, whoever else you could bring into training camp, I think it's probably Ballenboy.
Yeah, I think the potential is there. I don't know. What a luxury, though, to be like 15th roster spot is hotly contested.
And that's really in terms of like...
Right. There's not going to be a lot of other shuffling or battling for even starting.
Yeah, everything else is pretty like solidly above replacement level.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, probably 14th man is Howell Neto.
I would say so.
That's
I mean,
pretty,
at some point,
okay.
it was debatable whether Sheldon Mack
would...
Again, was
your starter last year.
Right. The most adorable starter. I think it's probably Joel. I don't think Tibor makes this roster.
Yeah, we talked about that before. But as always, if you guys want to ask us more questions, tweet us at Andy B. Larson, at @snark_tank. Zach Harper joins us on in the next segment. Before that, though, I want to talk briefly about Timmy Duncan and his retirement this week.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I thought it was really cool in the way he did it. And in particular, we were spared a season of Kobe-esque retirement
I can't
ceremonies.
Imagine Tim wanting anything less than the big hurrah around every visit. I think that teams would have liked that. I mean, it would have been nice to see a Jazz tribute to Tim Duncan.
And
maybe they'll still do it.
And we didn't really have that sense of this is the last time we'll ever see Tim
Duncan.
There's
no closure. This is just like you get wake up Benjamin Button style and he's left.
Yeah. What's the woman's name in Benjamin Button?
Daisy.
Yeah. Daisy sad. We're the Daisy here.
Right.
Tim Duncan is Benjamin Button, except
going
age
off to
goes the normal way for him, and that's why he's retiring.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a bummer from that point of view. I thought his like retirement interview and Pop's retirement interviews were both kind of adorable in that it's totally them sense. But
he just like sat at a kitchen table with a guy with an iPad and just like two mics, and it wasn't a thing. It looked like some college project. Like the production looked awful, but like you know, he could have had any kind of send off he wanted, and it feels like he chose what he wanted.
Yeah. Okay, so Utah-related questions about Tim Duncan real quick. Everyone's... The big debate is whether or not Tim Duncan is a power forward or a center. And the only reason this matters at all is whether or not you can say Tim Duncan was the best power forward of all time.
Because Jazz fans don't want it to usurp Karl Malone.
Right.
In
On
their
the other
mind.
Hand, Tim Duncan fans want to say that he is a power forward, so he's not a center. So because you can't say he's the best center of all time. There are too many, right? Like Bill Russell, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Right.
Probably better.
Wilt
Chamberlain. Yeah, thank you. There are just a lot of good centers through NBA history, and it's hard to say that Tim Duncan's the best one.
Right.
It's pretty easy to say he's the best power forward if you put him at that slot next to, you know, Karl Malone, Charles Barkley, so on and so forth. I do think that Tim Duncan was a better, more impactful to the league overall than Karl Malone.
Yeah.
And, you know.
One more.
You know, someone's going to attack me for that for saying that in Salt Lake City. But yeah, obviously won titles, Karl Malone didn't. I don't care so much for the rings argument. I do think Tim Duncan was like a monumentally better defender.
Mm-hmm.
Karl Malone was a good defender, don't get me wrong, but you know, we are legitimately asking ourselves whether or not Tim Duncan was the best long-term defender of all time.
Who never won a Defensive Player of the Year award, which is like Jerry Sloan never winning Coach of the Year.
Right.
Level of egregiousness. Equivalent.
But for kind of the same reasons, right? Like just this long stretch of being like the third best player.
Was never the flashy choice.
Right.
You kind of expected it from him. Like the expectation from Tim Duncan was he was always going to defend well. The expectation from Jerry Sloan was he was always going to coach well. And both of them did that. So, you know, a lot of times these awards are a little bit like who exceeded expectations.
Right.
And that's certainly Coach of the Year. 1,000% it's Coach of the Year. Award is like who did better than they were supposed to, and maybe that just never fell in the realm for Coach Sloan and Tim Duncan. They just always were great. And we took it for granted.
Yeah. I don't think it matters.
But did he play? Do you know the data on like where he played most of his minutes?
Yeah, so early in his career, he played mostly power forward. Then late in his career, he played center a lot. And then he switched over to power forward, you know, next to Tiago Splitter, mm-hmm. next to LaMarcus Aldridge. You could probably say Tim Duncan was the center there.
Yeah.
So we kind of switched back and forth a few times during his career. I think ultimately it's like a 60-40 split if you look at mm-hmm. it. The hard part is trying to figure out what it really is, right? Like,
yeah.
So Basketball Reference just does... positions by height, right? So
yeah.
Like if you've got, say, a 6'6 Dante Exum out there on the floor next to a 6'3 shooting guard,
they're gonna call
Dante Exum the two and the 6'3 guy the one, even if that's not the way it is. You do have some of that problem in
sure
there.
And I do think Tim Duncan's a good litmus test for like finding good human beings. If someone says Tim Duncan is your favorite player of all time, you know that's a good dude, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's some people, if they say, oh, Kobe's my favorite, you would get it, but you would also be highly suspicious. But someone chooses Tim Duncan as their favorite player of all time, I think I love them immediately.
Since you brought up Kobe, another real question here is whether or not Tim Duncan's the best player of the post-Jordan era.
Mm-hmm.
You've got him, you've got Kobe, you've got
LeBron,
you've got Kevin Garnett, you've mm-hmm. got Shaquille O'Neal,
sure.
I think are probably the big five mm-hmm. there. And I think Tim Duncan is probably second in that list. LeBron's probably number one in my mind.
And
Tim Duncan's second. I would maybe put probably Kobe above Shaq, but
Shaq was
probably more impactful.
He was dominant.
KG was very good for a long time too, but probably like a half inch below Tim Duncan for basically his entire career.
Yeah.
It's hard. Anyway, we gotta go to a break. We're still talking about it later. Zach Harper joins the show next segment from Las Vegas, talking about the NBA Summer League. That's next on the Salt City Hoop Show, ESPN 700.
You're listening to Salt City Hoops on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700.
Good to have California Love on right before we get Zach on
the
line.
That's what I was just about to say.
We're in sync.
Let's go ahead and bring him on. Zach Harper, the usual co-host of this podcast, CBSSports.com national columnist for the NBA. Zach, how are you?
I'm doing excellent. I've been in Vegas for 7 days. That's the perfect amount of time to be excellent in Vegas.
At what point does the Vegas experience turn on you, though?
Like 4 hours in. Really like 4 hours in. Then you realize you're here for a long time and there's just nothing responsible to do in any way.
How long were you there last year?
I think I went the full 12 days last year.
Are you just like becoming a Nick Cage gif at that point? Just like full descent into madness?
Yeah, which actually works out really well because that's the only thing I ever want to be. So this definitely helps speed up that process.
Great.
What have I missed? Because I left Tuesday night, so you've seen now two more days of Summer League. What are the trends over the last 2 days, Zach?
Well, people are angry that Ben Simmons didn't play
in
two straight games.
Isaiah Thomas.
That these games are entirely meaningless and that he shouldn't really be playing in anything. But like Kevin Durant played in three quarters of the first game. They realized he was way too good to play in this in like 2007, and then they sat him out for the rest of it. No one was complaining then, so let's let the young guys like get a little taste of it and get out. Other than that, the Brooklyn Nets are spectacular, which is weird to say, and the Utah Jazz just got hammered.
So I will disagree with you that people didn't complain when Kevin Durant didn't play, because I was there at the Utah. It was the Rocky Mountain Review back in the day.
Andy was a complainer.
And I did complain that Kevin Durant didn't play when I bought my $5 ticket.
Well, that is devastating. I mean, I feel like he should at least refund you on that one, because he did just sign a big deal.
Yeah.
That should be a lock.
Do you get your credential immediately pulled if you ask Kevin Durant for $5?
I think so, but I think the Thunder will then give you a job.
Yeah, I think that's... I mean, I don't know if I would ask that in the Warriors locker room right now, given the Salt City Hoops reputation in the Warriors locker room, but we'll see.
I don't know. I think you double down. I think you push it as far as you can go.
I'm here to redeem that image, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. The other talking point in Summer League is, like, I keep hearing all these nice people coming up and telling me about how good the Jazz are about to be in Vegas. And I, not just in Vegas, but this regular season. And I am almost uncomfortable with how good people are saying nice things about the Utah Jazz. Where do you stand? Are you also in on the Jazz?
Yeah, I get to use my favorite word right now, or one of my favorite words. The scuttlebutt around the Jazz right now is that they are going to be spectacular. Like, you have people saying they might be the 2 seed in the West, which that's a lot. Like, that's really high.
That's bonkers.
I think the Jazz are going to be great. I think the Jazz are going to be a fantastic team. I think about 50 wins is what they should shoot for. I think they're definitely a playoff team as long as everyone's healthy or the majority of them are healthy. Like, I think success should be, you know, really within their grasp. But to think that they're going to be the 2 seed, and it's not just one person being crazy. Like, this is a lot of people thinking this team could be one of the best teams in the league because, you know, they added George Hill, they had Joe Johnson, they had Boris Diaw. Those are three very quality players to put around all these younger guys and give them experience, and it maybe it's right. I don't know. This is a very good team.
Am I wrong to think that the entire Western Conference is going to be up next year, though?
It should be, because I really think the only reason it was down this year was injuries. I mean, the Jazz got injured a bunch. The Pelicans were a mess in terms of injuries. You had several teams like missing key guys throughout the year. Even the Clippers, like, the Clippers did well as a team, but they could have been much more dominant had Blake Griffin played, you know, half the season, not punched an equipment manager. I really think that the West is going to bounce right back. All this talk that, hey, maybe the East is actually better, I think it's crap. I think it's absolute crap. The East isn't better. The West is going to be better, and they'll bounce back.
All right, I want to play the in or out game that we played earlier in the show. We did in or out with Summer League players. Since this is a new part of the show, I want you to be part of it. And honestly, ultimately inspired by you and our conversations during Summer League where we're in or out on everything. I'm going to start with Thon Maker. Are you in or out on him?
I'm out on Thon Maker. He's great with activity in a Summer League process, but when it actually comes to real basketball stuff, he's so far out right now, can't make him in.
How about Chris Dunn?
I'm in on him, completely 100%. His handle's great. I don't know about his jumper, but he's great at attacking. I love the mentality, 100% in.
All right, what do the Timberwolves do with him, Rubio, and Zach LaVine?
Well, I think the good thing is they don't really have to make a decision. It doesn't mean they won't make a decision right now. But they could, you know, Rubio is such a bargain at this point with the cap jump and then jumping again next year that he's getting like $13, $14, $15 million a year over the next couple of years, and that's going to end up being a bargain. I mean, that's less than Evan Turner money. I mean, you could really jump up in value with that. And they can play him next to Chris Dunn. They can play Dunn and LaVine together. They can play LaVine and Rubio together. Obviously, I think that they have options, and they don't really have to. They're not approaching that tipping point of the trade value of Ricky Rubio yet. Maybe in a year they have to make that decision, but at least right now it's okay.
What do you think the odds are that they keep him throughout the whole season?
I think if he doesn't get traded before the preseason, I think it's probably 100%. I think that's a deal that probably happens around draft time or maybe the opening of free agency.
Okay. Buddy Hield, in or out?
Out. Really out. I've been trying to write a feature about him for 4 days, and I've been struggling because it's just not fun. It's really not fun to write about him right now. He's missing a ton of shots. He's missing a lot of open shots, which you can say, hey, those are going to fall. But a lot of the guarded shots that he's taking are falling, which you would think, hey, maybe those won't fall as much. He doesn't really do anything other than shoot. He has more shot attempts than points scored. I'm way out.
How about the Jazz man, Trey Lyles?
Oh, in. He was way too good for Summer League. If you had like a starting five of guys who are too good for Summer League, he'd be either the 4 or the 5, depending on how you wanted to put Bobby Portis in there. So he's definitely in and should be out of Summer League forever.
Were you surprised by how dominant he seemed? I mean, he definitely showed those flashes at the end of last season and was a competent starter. But, I mean, I was personally surprised by how much better he looked than all the competition.
Yeah, he just looked super comfortable, right? Like, everything he did, there was no panic in what he was doing. There was a real comfort, a real calmness to his shooting. And I think that was maybe a surprise. Not that he can shoot and not that he can play well, because you should expect that out of him. He's good and he developed really well during the season. But in terms of just being able to dominate no matter who was out there in front of him, even in a Summer League environment, yeah, that was a little surprising.
Kelly Oubre.
I'm in, but you know that I love Irrational Gunners, so that is the only reason I'm in.
Okay.
Speaking of Irrational Gunners, Jimmer Fredette.
Out. we gotta retire this Jimmer thing. I know it's too tough, but he's got to be out for everybody.
In or out? Speaking of Irrational Gunners, Tibor Pleiss. That's unfair.
I'm in as long as he's not going inside the three-point line.
Yeah, he's like actually a legitimately good shooter from the outside. It's just everything else is a bummer.
Right, everything else is a bummer. But that's a nice pick-and-pop option for, you know, the 4 minutes of garbage time they'll have 20 times this year.
That's true. 20 blowouts? I mean, I guess it makes sense. 20 blowouts is a normal number of blowouts.
I can't take this much optimism. It's not in my nature.
Well, you could also have blowouts the other way, too, and still get to play Tibor.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, but no, they're 100% of the blowouts are going to be in their favor. I guess we got to all get on board and start planning the parade route.
Zach, I can feel my heart breaking already. Don't do this to me.
No, I'll have my dog at the beginning of the parade. We'll lead it off. It's going to be great.
That's going to be my therapy animal if something goes horribly wrong this season.
Okay. I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this in an in or out sort of way, but let me ask you, do you like Tim Duncan's method of retirement better or Kobe Bryant's method of retirement better?
I'm in on both.
Okay.
I think they both fit the personality really well. I'm shocked we got as much out of Tim Duncan as we did.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I'm in on him having that conversation that he did and the way he went out and having Pop talk for him. Like, I'm in on all that. And I was in on the Kobe Bryant stuff. It was ridiculous. It was absurd. He took, 50 shots in his last game? But that was the only way it was ever going to end. And so I'm in on that for him.
Okay. How about Rudy Gobert? I want to talk about him after we hang up with you, but he's playing in the Olympics. What do you make of him deciding to play in the Olympics? And then he's also got the extension possibility coming up with the Jazz after that. What should the Jazz just try to extend him right away, even though they'd have less cap space next offseason? What do you think about that situation and whether or not Rudy does get an extension this year?
The first part of this I'm going to answer in the in and out. I'm out on everyone complaining about him playing in the Olympics.
Okay.
As long as the Jazz are okay with it, he should be allowed to play in the Olympics. I know he got hurt in FIBA a couple years ago or whenever that was. Get over it. He should be you know, honoring his country by playing, and I'm completely in on everything that he wants to do with that as long as the Jazz allow him to. In terms of the contract extension, I would get it done, I guess, earlier if they feel that there is a concern in terms of matching a max deal. Like, he's probably getting a max. I mean, we just saw Bismack Biyombo get, 4 years, $72 million. So if he can get that, Rudy Gobert is at least close enough to a max player that you want to try to – I get the idea of delaying it a little bit and trying to have that cap space next summer, but I really don't know how else they're going to use that cap space, and you're going to have to pay your guys anyway. So unless they're willing to go, towards the luxury tax in the next couple of years with all the extensions they're going to have to pass out, I would try to get it done as early as possible, lock him up, and just make him feel like he is comfortable and secure within the organization.
All right. That sounds good.
That's fair.
All right. We got to let you go, Zach, because you have more summer league games to watch for CBS and et cetera. But,
I'm out on more summer league.
You still have, 3 days left? Four?
I think so.
You don't know.
Are you having withdrawals from Boogie or what?
100%. I've been looking at nothing but pictures on my phone all the last 2 days.
The activity on his Instagram account has been disappointing.
It has been.
That's because both of his parents are in Vegas.
I know, but presumably someone is looking at him and also has a phone.
Yeah, did you give?
I know.
Did you give the dog shelter or whatever, the dog hotel, the Instagram password?
Yeah.
No, but they should have been texting us photos the whole time, so I'm going to want a refund when I get back.
That seems absolutely
no
fair.
Tip for those people.
No tip at all.
Are you supposed to tip dog keepers?
I don't know. That's not a courtesy thing I'm aware of.
Yeah. All right. I'm out on confusing tipping rules. Zach, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks, guys.
Good luck in your last 4 days.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. Zach Harper, CBSSports.com, national NBA columnist, and the usual co-host of this show, joins us from Vegas.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Rudy a little bit more, because I think that is a really big question, and we will have time to talk about A, his play in the playoffs, and B, the Jazz extending him or not extending him down the road. First of all, that playoff, the Olympic decision was an interesting one for him, because he didn't play in the qualifying for the Olympics tournament that just ended with France indeed qualifying. So I think that was a good outcome for Rudy. Obviously, his country qualified for the Olympics without him needing to step in and be that man in the middle. But kind of the same questions are at play for the actual Olympics itself. Like, and Gordon Hayward, you'll remember, just turned down playing for Team USA.
Right.
Who, admittedly, he's got a new baby at
Zika.
Home. Right. Rudy told me he wasn't at all worried about Zika at all.
Unless it's like, the name of a Pokemon that he wants to catch on Pokemon Go. Then he's got it on lock.
It's not, though. We know the Pokemon. You know the Pokemon, Angie.
I couldn't name them all.
You know that none of them are named Zika.
No, but it sounds... Just don't kill the joke.
You're so
it sounded
dumb.
Enough Pokemon-y. Yeah. Wow. Aggressive.
No, I'm...
This took a turn.
I'm not going to judge anyone for their Pokemon knowledge or lack thereof.
Yeah.
But so I think, you know, if you kind of wipe that away from one of the concerns, then it's, you know, am I worried about getting injured in the Olympics or not? And ultimately, then it's just, you know, 6 or 7 games, depending on how long they go. And given that Rudy is going to be playing basketball anyway, whether that be at the Zions Bank Basketball Center or down in Brazil against high level competition, you're probably fine with him playing in the Olympics from a risk point of view.
I'm definitely team like. Playing is good. Like, experience is good. As long as he's not exhausted, which I think was part of the problem last season, he kind of never got enough recovery time. I think he's been well rested in the off. And I think missing that qualifier was a big reason why he's made the decision to go now. He wasn't necessarily overextended, but like, you just can't do that to your players. And also, I think it's really important for Rudy to play for his country and. You don't want to like poison the well by telling him unequivocally, no, you can't play. Like I think that's a fine line to walk and you have to be really careful with that dynamic. And I don't think that's Dennis Lindsay's style to be straight up don't play.
No, because you want your players to be happy, especially ones that are making this extension or not sort of decision with you literally this summer.
And are kind of franchise defining.
Right.
In a way.
I went to France in June and talked to a few native Frenchmen about Rudy Gobert, and I thought it was interesting. They knew that he was not part of this qualifying for the Olympics effort in this last most recent tournament and were kind of upset about it. Like they were a little bit peeved. They didn't understand the NBA point of view. They, you know, they saw the France point of view and thought this makes it significantly less likely that the nation of France qualifies for the Olympics.
Right.
And we're, like I said, not, you know, they didn't hate Rudy Gobert for it. It wasn't like a Turkey and a Scantor situation, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But it was like a little bit of a annoyance.
They were miffed.
And I think, you know, Rudy obviously cares about what people in his country think. And I think that he has the opportunity to, by playing well in the Olympics in France, kind of win those people back. And have the opportunity to kind of show some of the NBA's best bigs who will be playing against him. Obviously, France is in the same group as Team USA, Venezuela, some good teams down there, Australia, who he'll be playing against NBA-level competition.
Well, and he has a chance to medal. Like,
right.
That's a good...
And
that's,
win a medal.
That's got a lot of NBA players on... Like, some teams, it's not a starting five of NBA players.
Right.
That French team is. So, I think it's that kind of national pride is really important. I think especially, I mean, with the events of today, that really bad truck attack where, you know, 77 people confirmed dead, like, and with the previous attack earlier this year, like, there's kind of this sense of, like, nationalism that's important right now. And I see why people get that put together with sports. Sports becomes the embodiment of a lot collective.
Oh my God, yes.
Right. Like, if anybody wants to talk about, like, the philosophical representation that sports embody, like, you get it. But I definitely see why this is such a big deal, both for his countrymen and for him personally.
Like, again, I was there, and you kind of feel how much, like, France's self-identity, and really any country's, does when, like, they're in a major tournament and...
Yeah,
kind of.
The Olympics are amazing for that reason.
Yeah.
We all feel unified.
Like being like standing in front of the Eiffel Tower watching France take on whatever random soccer team, Romania,
yeah.
and having 100,000 people in this park and you know there's flares and smoke and everything above you and everyone's focused on this game. You get the feel and everyone's singing songs, chanting, etc. You get like how much this matters to these people.
There's something important
basketball's not soccer, but right. it's like, you know, the Olympics are equally important. I don't
right.
know.
We all get behind on like random sports in the Olympics for that reason,
right.
because I think we all crave those collective experiences as human beings. And we feel so divided on so many things at all times that when you can sit back and be like, yeah, I want to watch Michael Phelps break a record, or yeah, I would love for the basketball team to medal, or like, it's just, it's something that brings the world down to a level that, like, yeah, we're all agreeing on this thing in this moment. And to go on a little bit of a tangent, like, Pokemon Go has been a little microcosm of that thing where mm-hmm. it's like people want to have a universal experience, and that's exactly what's happening. And as much as people poo-poo it, you know, the actual game is not amazing. That's not the point. It's kind of like people showing up places and having a universal, unified experience is really powerful. And that's my weird tangent for the
This is
segment.
A more high-level Pokemon Go conversation than you'll hear anywhere else on the radio, by the way.
That's why people come to me, Andy.
Yeah.
It's existential Pokemon Go questions.
Let's move on to Rudy Gobert's extension and whether or not he signs it. It's a really interesting conversation for two reasons. One, if you're the Jazz, you do have this choice of not having him not sign the extension, going into next season and kind of doing the Gordon Hayward, right? Where
sure.
he goes out, gets an offer from another team. You can match it either way. It causes you a little bit of hardship. It may mean that you pay him
more, or
for less amount of time.
Sure.
Even
sure.
like Gordon Hayward, he could go out and
right.
sign a
four-year offer sheet
and then a 3-year player option on that fourth
sure.
year. You could even do a Chandler Parsons where he signs a 3-year max deal and has a player option on the last year. I mean,
right.
he can kind of decide what happens there. If you just sign the extension now, it's going to be 4 or 5 years. If, you know,
yeah,
that's the Jazz have a decision on whether or not he'll be their quote unquote designated player. But he's probably, you know, either way, 4 or 5 years is a longer time and removes a lot of risk.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you don't get the salary cap space with the cap joint jumping up. You'll still have some, but you won't have as much as if you just let Rudy Gobert be a free agent and let only his cap hold go against you.
Sure.
So
also, like, there's potential of injury. Like,
right.
I mean, that makes sense that they put it off until after the Olympics because you don't know what could happen. I don't even like saying that. That
well,
makes my
yeah.
heart hurt. But, like, yeah, that made sense to do that. I'm just curious. I feel like Rudy, maybe this is me projecting, I feel like he feels such a competition with Hassan Whiteside.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wonder how much it's going to be important to him to make more than Hassan.
I don't think it matters. I mean, first of all,
I think Rudy also wants to help the team.
He's only going to be making $2 million next season no matter what happens.
Sure.
Right? The extension doesn't kick in until after.
Right. But what it represents, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Because he believes he's better than Hassan Whiteside.
Sure.
He's, you know, I wonder how much that matters to him.
I don't think a lot.
You think that's overblown?
Yeah. I mean,
fine.
I think he wants to be competitive, and I think he thinks that he's better than Hassan Whiteside, but I don't think that, like, I think he wants to show people that with his play on the court, not in how much money they make, because they're both going to make maxes, right? Like,
I just think it's interesting, because professional athletes are just hyper-competitive in every aspect of their life. So
yeah.
I don't know how far that carries over.
No, and it definitely does.
Yeah.
I don't know that he's looking at Hassan Whiteside. I think he's looking at like Timofey Mozgov and saying, if this guy got 18
That's
or
fair.
16 or whatever, then
yeah.
I'd want to be paid.
Bismack. Yeah. There's been some weird contracts this offseason.
There have been. We'll laugh about the Timofey Mozgov contract, by the way.
I can't wait.
In LOL Lakers. In fact, let's go ahead and go to break. It's that time anyway, and we'll hit LOL Lakers on the next segment, next on the Salt City Hoop Show on ESPN 700.
You're listening to Salt City Hoops on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700.
All right, welcome back to the Salt City Hoop Show. ESPN 700. Andy Larson, Angie Treasure joining you. We're going around the NBA, hence the cool ESPN NBA music. Obviously, so much has happened in terms of like free agent signings and everything like that. Not that much has happened in the last couple of days, so we didn't want to bore you on that. There is a whole big tracker of every free agent signing that's happened on ESPN.com. So if you need to be caught up on that news stories, check it out. If you guys have any questions out there on like specific free agent contracts we'd like or don't like that are not Los Angeles Laker related,
yeah.
Or Utah Jazz related, then we talk about those two teams a lot on the show.
Love and
mostly
hate.
Due to my childhood. Yeah.
Right.
And so, if you have any other questions about any other contracts that were signed, feel free to tweet or call.
Don't know if you know this, but Kevin Durant signed with the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, that seemed like a relatively big deal.
If any of you missed that, it's out there.
Okay, let's talk about that for just 1 second, though.
Okay.
That team's going to be so ridiculous.
Yeah.
They're winning the title.
82-0.
It's no, because they'll get bored. But, like, They'll just rest guys. Like, I think honestly one of the lessons they learned
Absolutely.
Last season,
they're not going to gun
you can't
for that
go,
record.
Yeah, you can't go for the record. You already have it for one.
Yeah,
but going for that record hurts your team in the playoffs.
Right. I think you're right. What they learned is they didn't have as much of an extra gear in the postseason that they needed.
And they're not that good if they rest Steph Curry and Kevin Durant.
Right. But can you imagine having the luxury to be like, okay, Steph gets to rest this night and Kevin Durant gets to rest that night?
Yeah, they could just alternate.
That's crazy.
It'd be kind of boring, actually.
I mean,
we wouldn't get to see it until the playoffs.
Yeah, that's some people's theory, though, is that like the next step in the rest thing is like you have an A team and a B team and you alternate for rest reasons.
You just,
Like, that would be crazy, but you could do it.
Yeah, but like the drop off between star players and non-star players is so big in the NBA. Like,
sure. Like, but when you have four of them,
right?
Like the Golden State Warriors.
So then, do you put a couple stars on your A team and a couple stars
yeah.
on your B team?
Sure.
And then for the playoffs, you merge them.
Yeah.
But then those players aren't used to playing together.
No, I know.
I know.
The actual logistics.
I'm trying to work.
It's obviously
I'm trying to figure it out.
It's important they figure out how to play together on the floor because you know. As the All-Star game has proven, it's not always great when you've just got 1,000 gunners on the floor together. Not that
right.
I think that's what this team is. It's clearly not, but...
But I will share this anecdote from the last Sloan conference I went to. Jeff Van Gundy said he went to his analytics staff back in Houston and asked, okay, you know, what's the optimal number of minutes to play Yao Ming? Where, you know, he gets tired and so probably doesn't help as much as a non-tired bench player, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they came back, crunched the numbers, found out, you know, how Yao Ming plays after when he's fresh in the game and is barely rested to how Yao Ming plays when he's played for a quarter straight, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that Yao Ming, who's been on the floor for a quarter straight, is still much better than the Rockets bench players. And
okay.
they had a pretty good backup center in Chuck Hayes and even Dikembe Mutombo at one point. I'm not sure which, but regardless, you know, they had a fairly above average backup center. Playing Yao Ming 48 minutes was their best strategy to win any given game.
Interesting.
So I wonder, like, if that doesn't work for you winning, if you're at all concerned about your seeding.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe the Warriors aren't, because if you can put it all together in the playoffs and you get
that was kind the of
number the, three seed, then
that was
whatever.
Kind of the pop philosophy for
right.
the Spurs teams. I honestly don't think it mattered to them as much if they were a 3 or 4 seed. You know, that
no.
for some teams, I think that's a badge of honor to say, hey, we came out number 2 in the West. But for others, it's just like, hey, it's all about getting to the postseason, having home court if you can get it, and then, you know, finding your way to the top.
It is incredible that they won 67 games
right.
while resting and rotating as much as they did last season. Every single one of their lineups is good. Like, the Spurs would actually be much more suited to that sort of A-B team style
mm-hmm.
rotation than the Warriors would be.
Interesting.
Just because, like, their worst lineup was still, like, a +5.
Right.
Do
you feel like that Spurs team is going to be very different without Tim Duncan, or you think it's a seamless transition?
I don't think it's quite seamless.
I don't either. I think it's a little understated how important he was to that team, and I know he wasn't playing... Was he averaging 20 minutes a game last season?
I think he ended up, with more than 20.
Okay.
I'll look it up.
I thought it was close, but
Yeah, I think it is close, but
I mean, you like to think someone who's only playing 20 minutes on a team,
25 minutes a night.
Oh, that is more than I thought, but I think he still really mattered. A 40-year-old Tim Duncan was a big deal.
I mean, in the press release, they mentioned how good his defensive real plus minus was. It was still tops in the league.
Right.
Pau Gasol, again, a 39-year-old. Pau Gasol is not that guy.
Yeah, Pau Gasol as your starting center is good, but he's not Tim Duncan, and he's not what he was what Tim was defensively. I mean, Pau Gasol has fallen off a cliff defensively.
Right. I think they lose a lot defensively, and I think they're like a 55-win team next season.
Which is a lot.
Which is a lot, yeah. It's probably more than the Jazz, cough Charlie Widows, the guy who projected the Jazz would win more than the Spurs next year. But
12 fewer games.
12 fewer games is a big deal.
Is a big drop-off, but also is probably good enough for second in the West.
I think you can get there by taking out Tim Duncan's minutes and assuming more decline from Tony Parker. They really didn't find a suitable replacement for him at the point guard spot.
Agreed.
Anyway, the around the NBA things I really meant to talk about. The NBA announced rule changes about intentional fouling for next season in the last 2 minutes. Basically, the last 2 minutes of every quarter now, intentional fouls will be penalized with 2 shots plus a ball, not just in the last 2 minutes of each half. So in the first and third quarter, you can't intentionally foul as well. Teams were doing that last year, remember, where they would kind of foul to set up a 2-for-1 for themselves.
Sure.
Making sure that they got the final possession of the shot, of the clock of that quarter.
Mm-hmm.
They do that in Europe a lot, but the NBA wants to see at least that sort of rule bending prevented. And it also does minimize some intentional fouling as well. The other way it minimizes intentional fouling is you don't really want to foul to get into the bonus, usually,
right?
Because then all sorts of other fouls
give
the other team free throws. And so if by the time you're in the bonus, that's the right time you really want to use those intentional fouls. That's usually in the last few minutes of the quarter. Removing 2 of those minutes as an intentional foul option does kind of help the problem a little bit.
Sure.
A lot of people said this was just a Band-Aid in terms of what they could have done. They could have extended these last 2 minutes out for all 48 minutes, right? If you're going to intentional foul, maybe we should have consistent penalties throughout that. A lot of NBA owners are worried about hiding the deficiencies of players like DeAndre Jordan, Andre Drummond, who are missing a lot of free throws.
I could be, in an argument, I could be persuaded either way on whether this is good or bad.
See, and I'm very anti-intentional foul. I think it should be ruled, like, if the referee thinks it's an intentional foul, I think it should be either 1 or 2 shots in the ball. Basically, make sure that you get no advantage from doing that. I'd rather it be probably 2 shots on the ball.
Interesting.
Just because things like intentional fast break fouls, which are not in this intentional fouling, because you're making the foul on somebody on the ball. But if in my mind, stopping fast breaks is bad for the game.
I agree with you.
And so if you can stop those fouls, you're going to have a better product on the floor.
Yeah, and I think that's ultimately what the league should be wanting to do is make it more watchable. And fast breaks are more fun. Watching people shoot free throws who are awful at them is not fun.
Kind of fun.
I mean, there's a bit of drama, but let's say their goal is to broaden their audience.
Right.
You're not getting someone in for that. Like, as an NBA person, it's like, hey, Andre Drummond missed a record number of free throws in this game. LOL. But no one else watching that game is going to enjoy it.
Agreed. The other thing that they made clear, although this was probably true last season, hopping on people's backs on the free throw line is an automatic flagrant foul. Last year they had that point of emphasis, but now it's like an actual rule. If you hop on somebody's back, you're going to get a flagrant. So players don't do that. That, to me, doesn't solve that problem at all. You can just grab the guy's arm and it's still a foul, not a flagrant foul. So it doesn't help that much, but anyway.
I mean, it's kind of a dangerous thing to do.
Right.
So it's good to discourage that.
Here's an interesting one. The Rockets use some of their cap space to renegotiate James Harden's contract. Harden gets to cash in on some of the cap explosion a couple years early. The Rockets get to lock him up an extra 2 years with that final season, which is the 2019-20 season. Those numbers don't sound real. Like, we're not going to have 2020.
It was like the Jazz getting the 2021 pick.
Right.
I'm like, that's pretend.
In the Trey Burke trade.
Yeah. That's an eighth grader, and that's a pretend year that we're never achieving. Like, that's that's the future.
That is still 1 year too old, though, for LeBron James Jr.
Yeah, which got to get in on that 2022.
Probably going to be a first-round pick, though.
Yeah.
The second-round pick is probably going to get you LeBron James Jr.
Dennis Lindsay, start getting those first-round 2022s somewhere.
I think it's a good move for both teams. It actually kind of mirrors a little bit the Derek Favors extension, where the Rockets have cap space just like the Jazz do. They want to lock up one of their players long term, and you might as well do that while you still have the cap space rather than spending it on a player that's not going to help you right away.
Yeah.
Keeping James Harden long term is good for the Rockets. Keeping Derek Favors long term is good for the Jazz.
I'm so confused on what this Rockets team's going to look like next year.
Yeah. A little bit weird, right?
Really good offensively.
Mike D'Antoni leading the way as coach.
Like, are you scoring 130 points regularly?
I don't think so.
But you're also giving them all back because you're going to be atrocious on D.
Right. You no longer have Dwight Howard back there.
No Dwight Howard. You added Ryan Anderson. I'm just so confused. They were such a mess last season. And the season before that, they went to Western Conference finals. I just am so beyond lost.
I think they'll be better. I think they'll be better than last season because they'll be like competently coached.
So who falls out of the playoffs? Dallas?
I think they can be better and still miss the playoffs. Right? Because they made the playoffs last year with what? 41 wins? 42 wins?
Yeah.
I don't think that's enough this year in the Western Conference.
I agree with you. It's definitely going to take more than being a 500 team.
So I think,
I think they might be 500. Then.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, 45 wins, I mean, for the Rockets, I think that's not crazy.
The West is going to be nuts.
I think Dallas probably falls out.
I agree. I don't think they have enough. Although, like, Rick Carlisle is still a wizard human being.
Yeah.
Those are contradicting statements.
Are wizards not human beings?
I think they're supernatural.
So, like, Harry Potter...
Because a muggle is a human.
No, a muggle is just a
non-magic person.
Is a non-magic person. Therefore, like, magic people are wizards.
I feel like being a wizard makes you not.
Harry Potter is a person.
Okay.
Don't try to take Harry Potter's personhood away.
Are wizards humans?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I talked myself out of it.
I'm in on that.
Okay. But Rick Carlisle is good
Rick
at
Carlisle
coaching.
Rick Carlisle is a human and is also a wizard.
And he tends to make the most out of his rosters. I think it's been, you know, he's really good at getting his teams to the playoffs recently, but they haven't been able to make noise in the playoffs for a while.
Right.
You've got an aging Dirk. You've got Harrison Barnes handcuffed to somebody. And you've got Deron Williams. And so injury. The only person who's not injury prone in that starting lineup is going to be Harrison Barnes.
Right.
And we don't know if he can carry a roster yet. I'm out on that.
Yeah, I don't think he can.
Yeah, I don't think he can either.
Yeah, I don't think he's a good player. I think he's okay. I think he's worse than Chandler Parsons is next season.
Interesting.
Anyway, the league told teams on Thursday, speaking of salary cap stuff, that the 2017-18 salary cap, so for next offseason, is currently forecast to be only $102 million, down from a previous estimate of $108 million. Basically, expenses are going up to the point, including on players, that instead of making $108 million per team, they're only making $102 million per team, or, you know, the amount that is proportional to the 50% in the collective bargaining agreement. So the result is that teams will have about $6 million less in cap space than they thought they would next offseason, which could make some interesting things happen. For example, the Warriors may not be able to re-sign Andre Iguodala and still have cap space.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
There's so many just little intricate things about this league that are fascinating.
It is the best. Like,
there's so much that's luck and so much that's strategy and so much is just make or miss league, man. There's so much intrigue in it for me.
Yeah, the NBA has taught me so much about, like, collective bargaining and labor laws, and then also so much about, like, Iggy Azalea's music career. And it's just an incredible mix of all these different factors.
We're getting so sentimental about sports today.
We are.
We could do a full 2 hours on, like, what sports mean to
people. We probably will during August and September when in the very doldrums of the offseason.
I'm in on that. I'll do that.
Okay. One more around the NBA note before we go to break. Dwayne Wade revealed that LeBron is so cheap, he only uses data on his phone when Wi-Fi is available. So he's not going over his plan minutes. He won't do the data overages.
That feels like hyperbole to me.
No, he told a story
where
Dwayne Wade told a literal story. He's like, they were about to go on the banana boat. And he was like, hold on, let me send this text real quick while they were still at Wi-Fi at the restaurant before they go out on the boat.
I think that's a person who's in control of every aspect of his life. Yeah. That's LeBron James.
If you have a budget, stick to it.
Sure.
Don't send that DM while you're out on your banana boat.
That's good life advice for everybody. Don't send a DM on a banana boat.
Literally or metaphorically.
It all goes down in the DMs.
All right, we got to take a break. On the other side, we didn't do LOL Lakers yet, but I promise we will next segment on the Salsa Hoop Show, ESPN 700.
You're listening to Salt City Hoops on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700. Now rapping basketball,
number one, Curtis Blow. Basketball is my favorite sport. The whole last segment should just be this song.
No, that's that first line is all we need. Basketball is my favorite sport. I like how they dribble up and down the court.
Yeah.
That's what I like most about basketball. It's just mostly the dribbling up and down the court.
Poetry.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if basketball was just dribbling?
It's like a very Neil Walkian sort of thing where if we just didn't keep score and just thought it was like ballet and just let athletes do athletic things in front of us for fun, that'd be great. Anyway, late, great Neil Walk. Let's go to...
Very specific reference.
Indeed. Let's go to LOL Lakers. So the Lakers have more going on than before, right? Like long term, they're looking okay. They've got D'Angelo Russell. They have
Brandon Ingram,
who's kind of sucking in summer league, but
he's got the body of Slender Man.
He is a very slender man. He is like 150 pounds. That's not true. He's just very, very skinny in person.
Yeah.
But they have made some hilarious free agent moves. The Luol Deng one was not that funny. I mean,
no,
they had to
4
years
is a long time.
Right. But the Timofey Mozgov move.
Like, they jumped on that. Like, they were all over doing that as soon as they could, as soon as the moratorium had ended.
Timofey Mozgov was their first call.
Yeah.
And they wanted to pay him $16 million a year so badly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. In fact, Timofey Mozgov is about to make more money than Gordon Hayward next season. Right.
That's so bad.
They also gave an extension to Jordan Clarkson. Again, something they probably had to do. But you look at their roster now, and it's Luol Deng makes $18 million a year.
Yeah.
Timofey Mozgov makes $16 million a year. Jordan Clarkson makes $12.5 million a year. Jose Calderon, who they just traded for, makes 7.7.
Yeah.
Lou Williams makes 7.
Yeah.
Tariq Black makes 6. Yeah, they re-signed him for a 1 year, $6 million deal.
How much
deal.
Does Huertas
make? Nick Young is still on their books, $5.5 million. Really, their top 7 players are all, beyond Luol Deng, are all kind of trash.
Yeah. There's nobody good.
Luol Deng's, decent, right? Like, they haven't spot up, but...
I'm not sure Jordan Clarkson's more than, a guy who can put up numbers on a bad team?
No.
I'm not convinced
that he's
good.
The good news is that the Lakers will continue to be a bad team for a while.
For a while.
But if you're the Lakers, doesn't it just make way more sense to, Miami Heat this in 2009 and basically set up your cap space so that everything expires next season and you have to pay, $15 million and to D'Angelo Russell, Ivica Zubac, Brandon Ingram and Julius Randle. I mean, I don't know if I said Randle already.
Yeah.
Regardless, you're 5 good players and then just leave, see what else is out there rather than spending long-term money on Luol Deng, Timofey Mozgov, and, I mean, I guess Jordan Clarkson's a young piece, but still I'm not convinced he's good.
This is assuming anyone in the front office of the Lakers is as smart as Pat Riley.
Right.
Although Pat Riley just did a dumb thing with Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, I mean, no one is, and I honestly thought that Mitch Kupchak was a good GM.
Sure.
And maybe at this point, it's not Mitch Kupchak making the decisions, maybe it's Jimmy Buss. But yikes. I just, it's really the Mozgov deal that was the biggest mistake, right? Like, giving 464 to Mozgov day one of free agency when there were so many centers out there to the point where, like, Festus Ezeli got a one-year, what was it, $8 million deal? And Myers Leonard, who is much younger, much better than Timofey Mozgov.
441.
I mean...
It just... Like, why wouldn't you wait that out? Like, who was knocking on Timofey Mozgov's giant door and saying, please, giant injured man who we don't know can touch basketball without, like, knocking it into the backcourt? Like, please sign with us.
Like, clearly there was a shortage of wings, right? Like, Alan Crabb got 470 late into free agency.
Crazy.
Also going to be making more money than Gordon Hayward next season, by the way.
I think they're going to regret that contract.
Yeah, I think so. Me too.
I don't think they could let him go, but I also don't think it's smart.
I think they could let him. Like, why could they let him go?
I don't know. I think a bad I think they were panicking, but I think a bad contract is a bad contract, and Timofey Mozgov is, like, the top of the bad contracts this offseason.
It's not great. Him and Evan Turner, again.
Oh, Evan Turner. That was awful.
Yeah. Anyway, that's LOL Lakers. Yeah, okay, so quick, laugh at the Portland Trailblazers segment. They just they just signed Evan Turner for 4 years, $70 million.
For having such a quality offseason last year and being really heralded as replacing their starters in a really smart, money-saving, but player-efficient way, and then doing the opposite of those things by being like, hey, Evan mid-range Turner, please sign with our basketball team.
Right, and there is a point where you just need to spend money to make your team better to fill in those holes. But it's hard to say that they got better, right? Like,
I don't think they're better.
Is Evan Turner better than Mo Harkless?
He needs more. He needs more usage to be effective, and then it's worse.
Takes the ball out of Damian Lillard's and CJ McCollum's hands.
Why would you do that? Yikes. It doesn't make any sense. Like, I think everyone compared the Jazz to the Trailblazers last season, and I get why they did that. But I also think the Jazz are going to be in a better spot this season than the Blazers are.
Yeah.
Both win-wise and, like, franchise-wise.
Enes Kanter, obviously, is making more than Gordon Hayward, because, of course, Bismack Miyombo now is too.
Remember when everyone was so upset about that contract?
Ryan Anderson's getting $18.7 million a year. Nick Batum got 20. I'm just going through some of these numbers, and it's still crazy.
That's so much money. I would like $20 now, just from somebody.
From any of these players that I've just named?
No, just like a person on the street.
If you would like to give Andy Treasure $20, please
DM me.
DM Snark Tank. Do you have open DMs?
I don't. Oh. Is that a thing I should do?
No, probably no one's going to give you $20.
I just would be afraid of what would show up in my inbox if that happened.
Probably a bad idea. Anyway, that's our show for today. Thank you guys for listening. As always, we post these online on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud, as well as on saltcityhoops.com. Check us out there with more articles and insight about the Utah Jazz. Also, check out my articles on KSL.com. Thank you all for listening. This has been the Salt City Hoops Show on ESPN 700.